Blog Talk Radio.
YAA. It's not just for young adults anymore. Anyone who reads it knows that most YA is timeless and ageless, and not to mention, it's good for people who have short attention spans. Celebrating coming-of-age stories, YAA celebrates all ages, genders, and genres. Join us as we shout, YAA.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Jeff Adams. Welcome to YAA for today. I've got my co-host with me, W.T. Prater. Hi, Will. How's it going?
Hey, what's going on?
Excited to do another show and really excited for this guest. We've got Brian Cohen with us today. He's the author of the YA sci-fi fantasy series Ted Saves the World, as well as the co-host of his own YA book review podcast called The Split. Welcome to the show, Brian. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Very excited to talk YA and some Ted.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of reading the first Ted book, Ted Saves the World. Will, have you had a chance to read it yet, by chance, or?
I purposely read the first couple of chapters of a book because I'm a big fan of not spoiling. So I've read the first six chapters of this book. So, yeah.
Okay. Very good. Very good. And there's also three more books in the Ted series beyond book one. I've started book two. I don't want to spoil that as we go forward in the interview if we can. For our audience who may not be familiar with Ted, can you give us a little bit of what the series is about?
Sure. Ted Saves the World is about Ted Finley, a 16-year-old high school student who magically gets superpowers, and it's about his protector, Erica LaPlante, also a teenage girl who actually died and then came back to life with the consciousness of a warrior spirit to keep Ted safe, and the two of them must fight back the forces of evil as they try to take over the school and the entire world.
Yeah, I do like how it starts with just, you know, the school, the town, the world. It radiates itself out from there.
Yeah, and I know you aren't too far in there, but every book I kind of try to take it another level. It expands a little bit further, and it's been a lot of fun to write, and I've gotten a lot of great feedback from fans. It's not a huge amount of fans, but it's a small, dedicated bunch that really keep me going in times when it's tough to write and be more things than just an author, because a lot of people who are self-published are not just authors. They are many things at the same time.
Right. And the Ted books, you've self-published all those, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And including audio with the first book.
Yeah. I did an audio version of the first book with Stephen J. Cohen as the narrator, no relation. And I really enjoy what he did with it because it's scary. You're handing it off to someone, and they are going to give their own interpretation. But that's been a really cool process, and I think a lot of people really have enjoyed the audio. I know I personally consume about an audiobook a week, so I knew I had to get at least one of these into audiobook format.
You think you'll do the others at some point?
I want to. I need to decide if I want to continue doing the royalty split option on ACX, which is the audiobook creation exchange, or if I want to pay up front, and that's, a decision that comes down to money. It comes down to, you know, maybe I want to do it myself. I have an acting background, but I don't know. I think that we'll have to see how things go, I would like to have all of them in audio at some point.
What was your inspiration for the series?
I am a huge Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Joss Whedon fan, as many of us are. Yep. I've already got my Thursday night tickets to go see Avengers 2. I had this idea. I was wondering what it would be like if Buffy and Giles, the teenage cheerleadery fighting person, and the wise old mentor, what if they were the same character? And so that gave me the idea for Erica LaPlante. And from there, I gave her kind of a companion in Ted, who was your everyman, just figuring out the superhero-y multiple world landscape that's set out in the series. And I put them together, and originally it was a novella that I put out in 2011. And a few years later, I decided, you know, I'm going to take a crack at finishing a novel, because like a lot of authors, I have five or so unfinished novels on a hard drive somewhere. And this one, I said, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to make it happen. And I got in a rhythm, and a year later, I have four of them out. So.
Wow, that's you cranked those out fast.
Yeah, it. I had to do it before I lost my momentum. So I tried to come up with a system, and I actually am now thinking deeply about doing some training for other people on how to write books fast, because it really has made a difference in the number of fans I've been able to get and the number of sales I've been able to get. And so, yeah, it's not easy, but there is a system to it.
How would you describe
Brian,
your style?
Curious.
Oh, sorry.
No, I want to ask a question now. Okay.
Okay.
So, I'm curious, when you were making a decision as far as what genre you wanted to go into, YA is often one of the most difficult to write in because of the fact that, particularly if you're myself and you're 36, it's harder to identify with the younger POV. How did you help yourself get in that headspace, and why did you decide that you were going to go with a YA market?
I think part of it is because I've always enjoyed television, movie, and books pitched at the young adult demo from Buffy. I mean, I was thinking this isn't really fit, but I'm thinking of Grey's Anatomy right now. Grey's Anatomy is a show about adults who act like teenagers.
Right.
And everybody loves it. Not everybody, but.
I do.
Oh, good. My wife really enjoys it. I grew out of it a little bit. But anyway, I think that shows that either portray teenagers or portray adults dealing with teenage situations, it feels easy for me to slip into that, maybe because I watch too many hours of Buffy, maybe not, but just bad teen dramas when I was a kid, from Party of Five to 90210.
Saved by the Bell. That's the all-time worst best show ever.
It is definitely.
Watching
the worst
it now
show.
As an adult, I'm like, oh god, this is difficult to watch as an adult.
It is. But I don't know if it's just the fact that I loved watching those so much, or if it's just that I don't feel comfortable writing as an adult because, I don't know, I'm kind of a young, I don't know. I look young, I'm 32, but I look like I'm in my mid-20s or early 20s. I always try to keep things goofy and light. And so I don't really feel like it's much of a stretch for me to write teenage, but who knows? That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
There you go.
How did you...
Okay, Jeff, I'm shutting up so you can ask a question.
How did you make the leap to doing superhero YA as opposed to any of the other, you know, subgenres that are out there?
Well, I think that I've always been a multi-genre guy. I like multiple genres in the same thing. That's what Joss does, and that's what I like doing. And I think that I started writing, when I wrote the novella, it just sort of came out as a superhero book. And years later, I don't know if it was the right choice or not, but I definitely have some fans who really like it, and I think that I'm going to be able to expand it to bigger and better things as I move forward with it. And I've got a lot of promising, exciting marketing coming up in the future. But I think that I've always loved superheroes. I've been a huge fan of all the Marvel movies. I loved watching bad superhero movies in the 80s and 90s. And I think everyone can just kind of identify with, you've got your guy who started from nothing and became something incredible, and we all aspire to that. We all want to have that happen to us. And so I think that I've multiple people have written in reviews, like, teenage boy wish fulfillment sort of thing. And it is. You get a chance to fly and you get a chance to save the world. It's a very exciting thing, and it was an exciting idea for me as a kid, so I think I channeled that a lot when I wrote it.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I could, I just want to ask you, from a writing perspective, the fact that you have a main character, but at least in the first couple of chapters, you alternate between four different character point of views. Was it difficult for you to transition from one character into writing it into a different character's headspace, or was that an easy transition, or how did you approach that?
I don't know. For some reason, and maybe I have a multiple personality disorder or something, but I really don't have much of a problem jumping in. I think that's partly my acting background. I used to do acting and improv comedy, and you play a lot of different characters there. So jumping from one to another, I think that it's actually kind of refreshing, though I am considering in future series, because I have continued the multiple character point of view shifts throughout the series, which some people like and some people don't. But I think that I will try some straight up first person going forward, but I really enjoy it. I really enjoy seeing things from different people's, the different characters' perspectives. I enjoy seeing how they absorb different things, and it gives me a lot of leeway because I get to show where everybody is at certain points. It's very much influenced by the TV I watch and have watched, and I write kind of cinematically in that way, and I think that it can be a challenge some days, but usually I will be writing, I'll write my outline, and then I'm like, oh great, I have a Natalie chapter coming up, I'm going to get fired up for that, and so I think in a way it helps me, it helps me get motivated.
Cool. I love it. Just me personally. I love,
well,
that's
you.
One of my favorite elements about this book is the fact that you're not just, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the Harry Potter books. They're one of my favorite series of all time, of course. But there's so many times during Harry Potter reading it, I'm like, I would really like to understand this from Hagrid's point of view or Hermione's point of view or one of the other characters' point of view, and all you ever get is Harry Potter's point of view, which is his book, so fair enough. But I love when you get into YA and you get to see it from a more rounded point of view, in my opinion.
Well, I'm glad you like it. You'll like the whole thing, then.
Yeah, it really worked for me, too, for that reason, because it let you have a slightly broader perspective of what was going on than just, Ted's got some powers now, and where did those come from?
Yeah.
Although I have to say that, well, I definitely got the Buffy vibe out of the book. The other thing that I kept flashing back to from TV was Greatest American Hero, with the guy who doesn't have the instruction manual to what he just got.
Yeah, yeah, and I've never seen that many episodes of that. I think maybe I saw one once because it was before my time, and I didn't ever catch up on it, but. I feel like that's a very apt comparison, for sure.
And I'm not just saying that you have to run out and see them, because it really doesn't. That show did not age that well, like so many from the 70s didn't.
We've talked
a little bit about your writing style and how you write these. Are you more of a plotter or a pantser with these? And is it something that you
I used to be a pantser. I definitely used to be a pantser, but I had to realize for myself that I tried to pants my way through about 5 books, and I never finished them. So that led me to believe, well, I should probably try something different, and I didn't even understand really the difference between pantsing and plotting, but when I learned it from guys like the self-publishing podcast guys and story beats, and I thought I could just improv comedy my way through things, but as soon as the first book I ever really plotted, the first fiction book I ever really plotted was Ted Saves the World, book one. And so obviously plotting works for me. I outline for a couple weeks, and then I go all in on starting my rough draft from there.
Do you write in order? So you go from, like, start to finish, or do you tend to maybe split it up between, I'm going to do a bunch of Ted chapters and then a bunch of other point of view chapters?
I do it in order. I think that just helps my brain. I'm pretty linear in that way. Every so often, while I'm doing the first draft, I will give myself permission to change something in my outline and let that affect future chapters in the outline, just because, oh, this is a way better idea. I should go in this direction. And so that will sometimes affect the things that I had beforehand, but I'll finish the entire rough draft before I go back to change a single thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to say that if you do the class on writing fast, I will totally, like, just go ahead and sign me up now, because I need that. I am definitely one of those people that if I don't write something when I'm in the moment and feeling the momentum of it, it's pretty much going to go in my bank of may never see again.
Yeah.
I have a works-in-progress list of 58 stories. If that tells you anything about, my brain is not a normal brain. I wanted to ask you about the marketing, though, because you've done something that I think is really smart, and I wish more authors would catch on to it. I'm curious, was this an idea that you came up with as far as, so for anybody who's listening who wants to read these books, the first book is actually free on Barnes & Noble, and you can find the link to that both on the writersonlinenetwork.com YAA page, and you can find it on the episode page for this episode. So make sure that you go to one of those links and get a free copy of this book, because it's so good. But then with the second book, you decided that you were going to give that one away to anybody who signs up for your mailing list or something like that. Is that right?
Correct, yeah. It's a strategy that I've heard referred to by author Nick Stevenson as the reader magnet strategy. Basically, the best way to get traffic to your website is one of the best ways is through a free book. And the best way to get people to sign up for a mailing list is also a free book. But you can't very well say, hey, you're looking at this free book. Get this exact same free book by signing up to my mailing list because you already have the book or you're about to download it. So that is basically pointless. So as a result, you can make your second book free, or you could have a novella, a prequel, a book in another series, something. I mean, the mailing list is just so important to your sales and to getting more reviews and just to get that motivation of, hey, I have people out there who will get really frustrated if I don't meet my deadline. So whatever motivation you need, just having those people on the list helps. So, I mean, I have four books out, and technically you can get two of them, four books in the series out, and you can get two of them for free, which, you know, some people wouldn't jive with that, and I don't always jive with it. But I got to tell you, my overall sales have not gone down since I've done that, and I still sell copies of that second book. So I think that some people may be taking me up on the offer and still be buying the book, and some people don't take me up on the offer but just go and buy the rest of the series because they like it. So I'm pretty happy with how it's worked out, and I'm getting more mailing list subscribers than I did previously.
Awesome. It's a great idea. Great, great, great idea.
Yeah, I stole it, so, you know.
So you released the fourth book called The Light, the Dark, and the Ugly earlier this month.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard on top of that you've got a prequel and another sequel due out this year.
That is
correct. How far do you see the TED series going?
Well, I am doing 7 books in the series, not including the prequel, which is going to be a novella. So I'm doing 7 novels in the series, and that will tie up the general overarching storyline of the TED Saves the World series. There's going to be the prequel novella. I've also kind of wanted to flex my muscles with some single tales, some one-offs, some adventure for Diraj, an adventure for Natalie alone, these sorts of things. So I see 7 main books in the series, but then from there, I mean, I've got the TV episode experience. I can always make go between book 1 and book 2 and just put 100 stories in there and do it for the heck of it. So sky's the limit.
Well, I can definitely say, as somebody who is a hardcore Joss Whedon fan, that having that type of formula when you're writing is not a bad thing at all, because I am – one of the things that I love about Joss Whedon is I love the fact that our standalone episodes, absolutely, within Buffy, within Angel, within all the TV shows that he's done, but there are definitely also overarching storylines, which I actually appreciate more because it keeps you connected and makes you want to get into the next one. And I definitely, from the reviews that I've read about Ted Saves the World, when, like, I don't know how many people that are listening to the show go to Goodreads and read the reviews before they get the book, but this is, like, I read through probably 25, 30 reviews, and one of them was a negative review. All the rest of them were, you know, 4 and 5 stars. So that tells you what the kind of feedback that people are giving. I'm curious, is there a plan in the future to do a paperback release for this book? Or are you planning to just keep it digital and audio? Or what are your plans as far as that goes?
It is available as a paperback on Amazon. The I don't know if it's available on some of the other, like Barnes & Noble and whatnot, but it is available on Amazon as a paperback. It actually looks pretty slick as a paperback. I've got to give props to my my photo people who helped me take these pictures, because I did a live photo session with the actors who are my Ted and my Erica. And I have to give props to Photography, who took those pictures, and then Robot Brain Design, who did the awesome cover. Because in the mat, I don't know if you guys have done the Create Space paperbacks, but there's glossy or matte, and the matte covers for this just look real slick and, you know, all legitimate-like. Awesome. It's very exciting.
I'm glad you touched on the covers, because I've been curious if you happened on stock or if you actually did your own photo shoot for that. And I think it's very cool you went out and got your actors and did the photo shoot. Because I love how every cover that I've seen so far, you know, they're the same but different. So you just know that that's a TED book and it's in that series. And
it's
pretty slick.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, I wanted to make sure they were branded. I wanted to make sure that everyone would know that it's all part of the same thing. So, thank you very much.
Before we run out of time, I do want to talk about your other YA endeavor. You've got a weekly podcast out there called The Split, which you co-host with Robert Scanlon. How did that come about, and kind of what's the story with that?
I connected with Robert after he had an interview on Simon Whistler's podcast, the Rocking Self-Publishing podcast, and we became fast friends. And he also writes a young adult series called The Dreamer Chronicles. And since we were both YA writers, we said, hey, maybe we should do a YA podcast, and decided on The Split, a podcast where I listen, he reads, to a new young adult book, and we've done over 25 episodes now, and that's about 20 of those books I never would have read if it wasn't for this show. And the great thing is, the more you read, the better you get at writing, and so I feel like I've made a lot of improvement. If you guys like book one, you're going to love book four, because everyone gets just a little bit better, and part of that is just the sheer amount of words that I've read over the last year.
So real quick, because I know we only have 2 minutes left on the show, what is your current favorite YA book? Excluding your own, of course.
I wouldn't have picked my own. I love the young adult book Before I Fall by Lauren Oliver. And I'll go with a tie, Throne of Glass by Sarah Moss. They're both just really well done. Before I Fall is like every kid should probably read it. Every teenager should read it, especially when they're getting annoying to their parents and whatnot. And Before I Fall is just really good. Throne of Glass is just really good young adult fantasy. And it's just so good. And both of them have really wonderful protagonists that you either love to hate or love, and so I think that's what makes those books so enjoyable for me.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we're down to about 30 seconds now. What's coming up for you immediately next?
Working on the TED prequel, and then I'll be going into book 5 in a few months now, so go check out TED for free. And maybe you'll like the series.
All right. I'm pretty sure they will. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a blast.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. It was a lot of fun.
All right. And we'll be back next month with another episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thanks.